duplicating the various task forces and meetings that we get together and meet, and so that we aren't duplicating services and talk about those kinds of things. Funding is usually based very much on whether you duplicate services or not, so we try not to do that.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. We really appreciate all the information. And I would like to have, if you could send it down, a copy of the curriculum that's used in the Choices Program for our files and have available for the task force members. It is something that's easily, I don't know what the curriculum looks like, so I'm not sure what it is I'm requesting.
I have a brochure that outlines the curriculum. The curriculum itself is, you know, it's lengthy, but I certainly can get you a copy.
That'd be great. I appreciate it.
Do I have the address?
The LIO there in Fairness can ship it down to us in the pouch.
Okay.
That's probably the easiest way.
Okay. And one last comment that Camille wanted me to make was the fact that I'm talking a little bit more about school-based clinics, and we certainly aren't opposed to school-based clinics, so I don't want to give that impression. One of the concerns or an idea that we felt needed to have clarification was that if school-based clinics are to be operated with the idea, of course, of preventing child abuse and neglect and also deal with the deprivation of families and the family unit, that it may not be necessarily a catch-all for pregnancy issues. And it's not to say that pregnancy doesn't result from a lot of the family breakdown and some child abuse and neglect issues. They certainly are all related. But just a word of caution, and not to use pregnancy as a catch-all and hit pregnancy issues for a catch-all there. That's just a thought we had.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that's a point well taken. What I'd like to do, looking at the agenda, we're going to jump around a little bit. Rather than talk right now about a meeting with the state board, I'd like to go ahead and have Joanne and Laura talk to us about the Anchorage Crisis Pregnancy Center and the Valley Crisis Pregnancy Center. So if you two would please come forward. It's my understanding that at noon, our staff is going to be bringing in everyone's sandwiches for those of us who have ordered sandwiches, so we'll just continue right through, and when they actually come in, we'll be great. You can do whichever you do. Actually, it's probably best if you both sit there.
Sit right here.
So when they do come in with the sandwiches, if you'll bear with us, we'll break.
Sure.
While they hand them up, it's probably somewhat confusing. Those of you in the audience, most of you probably realize by now that right on the corner to the right is a little deli. Feel free to grab your sandwich and bring it back in. You're certainly welcome to eat in the room with us and lunch on tape along with us. But let's go ahead and get started in the interest of time. And we apologize for any inconvenience if we break in the midst of your discussions. If you would identify yourselves both for the record, please, and then however you'd like to break the time at this time.
Okay, my name is Joanne Mextro, and I'm from the Anchorage Crisis Pregnancy Center.
And I'm Laura Farr, Executive Director of the Valley Crisis Pregnancy Center.
We will try to be very brief and give you a very brief history of who we are and then what we feel that we have been able to accomplish in the decision-making refusal skills in the Anchorage and the Valley High School and Junior High School programs. The Crisis Pregnancy Centers are locally organized and funded. The Crisis Pregnancy Centers are locally organized and funded nonprofit organizations serving the Alaskan communities for the past 6 years. Anchorage has been open since 1984, the Wasilla since 1986, and Eagle River opened this year in 1989. After seeing over 2,000 teens, 101, we have really become convinced and committed to promoting pregnancy prevention through decision-making and refusal skills training in the schools and also one-on-one. We are an outreach of love and concern through a staff of well-trained volunteers. Our purpose is not only to promote teen pregnancy prevention through abstinence training, but also to support men and women who are also in a crisis pregnancy situation at this particular time through our advocacy programs. Our sole financial support comes through concerned men and women representing a cross-section of religious community, churches, and fundraising events. We have initiated a decision-making refusal skills program in the Anchorage School District in some of the classrooms back 3 years ago. And we have found it, as we have gone into these classrooms, we've found it to be very beneficial. We also, after having spoken to many teens, we found it real important to begin to establish a positive peer counseling training program where we invite students into the center where we will give them communication training so we can teach them how to communicate with one another. We also give them decision-making skills training, and we also discuss relational skills in regards to their own lives. We, after really evaluating what we have seen come through the center over the last years, we really are encouraging a new strategy to be presented to the community at large, and that would be to focus our attention on the fact that not everyone is saying yes, and that a new strategy could be presented, that positive peer pressure campaign to teens through the media and the educational program could really be magnified and to be found to be a successful program, not only to deal with the pregnancy issue that we have today, but to talk and encourage those who are not sexually active at this time to learn how to say no and make them aware that it is okay not to be sexually active in their junior high and their high school ages. If they choose not to be sexually active, that we can present a positive peer pressure program to them that says, hey, right on, it's okay. And I asked Laura to come also because she is involved in a program in the Valley, and I'll let her share with that a little bit more.
Thanks a lot, Joanne. I've had the privilege of doing abstinence programs in the Valley in all of our local high schools, there's four of them, over the last 2.5 years, and working one-on-one with kids. And I've really enjoyed it. I guess I can relate to their energy. I have a lot of energy. And the fact, too, that over the last year, I'm a single gal, and I have chosen sexual abstinence before marriage. And so I'm not a person barking up a tree. I can relate to them, I suppose, on their level. Working with kids is, I've found that you can't talk at kids, but I try to incorporate videos, video discussion, and interaction with kids. I've found that to be very positive. On the last page of your pamphlet we handed out to you, I have an agenda for the 4 days that I'm in all of our public high schools in the 10th grade. I guess I'm just excited about what's happening because of the positive evaluations which I'm hearing from the kids, and one of the sheets there I've given you some very positive things we're hearing, and also the relationships that are forming. Kids coming to our center, we've promoted some thinking, we've challenged them in their viewing their sexuality, not only from a physical standpoint, because most kids are physically mature, even at junior high level, to have sex, but promote them in their thinking about their mental maturity, their emotional maturity, their spiritual maturity, their social maturity, to be able to handle the consequences of their sexual activity. I just want to briefly go through our program. I talk to kids, what are you looking for, a committed relationship? Yes, most kids are. What are they looking for in a committed relationship? And so we find that many of the things that kids are looking for take many years to develop that. I take the kids through the decision-making process, defining the decision. Yes, we are sexual people, but now how am I going to handle my sexuality? In doing that, in making any good decision, you need to explore your values. What are your values concerning sexuality at this point in your life? Another area that I really key in with the high school kids is establishing personal goals. I ask the kids, I say, what do you have for a goal 1 month down the road, 3 months? A lot of kids don't have goals. You know, kids today are so geared for right now. If it feels good, do it. But I try to get them to think along that line. What do you want to do in a year? Do you want to go to college? You know, do you want to buy a car? Those kind of things. And how is your sexuality right now going to affect your goals and the things that you want to do in the future? And how is having a baby right now going to affect your goals? And I try to get them thinking along that line of future and goals. Even if it's just 6 months, it's good. You have a goal. Identifying their choices. Again, I don't talk at kids. I let them look at the consequences. Okay, what is the consequences of sexuality in your life, sexual activity in your life right now versus commitment? And if that's marriage, well, let's look at the consequences. And of course, the board is all filled up. And looking at consequences, we not only have to look at the physical consequences, which with AIDS and over 70 STDs today is a concern, but how about in the emotional area? What are the consequences? We're seeing a lot of kids today, we're not only dealing with the physical consequences, I'm seeing more kids struggling emotionally with sexual involvement at an early age. What are the social consequences? What are the legal consequences today of your sexual activity? And so we bring them through the process of making a decision now. How am I going to take action? I think if we're going to teach kids about the benefits of saying no to sexual activity, before commitment, I think we need to give them the whys and how to do that. And so we go through that, and it's there's a lot of things that are discussed. We're talking about self-esteem issues. We're talking about the influence of drug and alcohol abuse on their sexual activity, and so a lot of things. The third day, I have a real good time. We've kind of been through some heavies the first 2 days. The third day, we do role-playing, and it's a lot of fun. Kids have never been in a situation maybe where they maybe had the courage inside. They don't feel it's right to say no. So we have a lot of fun with role-plays. We talk about passive behavior versus aggressive behavior. We focus in on assertive behavior. We do role. We see videos and we see kids. You know, kids are being girls are being real passive and they're not being assertive. We talk about that. We talk about the importance of having self-confidence, about being able to communicate how you feel about the decision you've made in a self-confident, assertive way. And then I think I'm real excited about our last day. I bring a panel discussion board in. Just so happens, Joanne talked about developing positive peer pressure. Just so happens in every school I've been in, the kids, I try to bring in teenagers, boys and girls that have decided to say no to sex before marriage. They happen to be the athletes and the valedictorians. They just happen to be the kids that are really looked up to in the school. I bring these kids in. I bring a physician in. I bring in a girl who at the age of 12 experienced pregnancy and placed her baby for adoption, and then again at 16 she experienced abortion. She shares that testimony. This is a powerful day. The last class I did, my gal that experienced crisis pregnancy as a teenager couldn't make it to the first period class. I told the kids that she would be the second period class. Every one of the students, boys and girls, every one of them got out of their second period class so they could come back and sit in on this teen panel discussion. It's positive, it's working, it's bringing, it's developing positive peer pressure, it's letting these kids know that there are other kids that are saying no, that it's okay to say no, and it is working because the kids are coming back, they're responding. So I'm real excited about the program. I do feel that a lot of students have made their decision by the time they reach the 10th grade, and I would really like to see us be able to get it in at the junior high level at this point. Thanks.
When you're talking about a four-day program, you're talking about a class period a day for 4 days?
Right.
And the students that you're with in the Valley are 10th graders, and in what class?
The health education class.
Health education class, okay. And how many is that a required course in the Valley? Do you see all the 10th graders?
Yes, I believe it is required.
Okay. So you're actually touching all of them.
Right.
And how was this developed in terms of your relationship with the school board? Did they ask you to develop a program and bring it into the schools? Did you go to them? How did that interface work at the beginning?
Well, when I stepped in the position, we had already been in the school, so I'm not exactly sure how it was set up. I believe that we did have a representative go to the school board, but basically I had teachers calling me saying, help. We need some input here.
And do you do any follow-up back with these classes a month or 2 months or however many months later?
I don't have anything specifically designed for that, but we do see a number of kids coming back to our center to talk.
To the center.
to the center. They want to talk to someone, and we've promoted some thinking, and establishing a relationship with those young people is really important. So I'm really excited about that.
Have you done the class for all the counselors in the schools, or even the teachers, but specifically the counselors? Have they been through it so they know the kids come to them after you go through it?
No, they haven't. But the public is open to come to the classes.
Right.
Thank you. Both Laura and Joanne, I am real excited to hear about what you're doing, especially with encouraging kids. That not everybody is saying yes, because that is something that's real important. Everybody's not doing it. However, as a health educator, I'm also a little curious to know, when you guys talk about being abstinent, are you guys talking about sexual intercourse? Do you have discussion with the teenagers about petting, masturbation, deep kissing, or does that come up? I was just kind of curious because, as we all know, teenagers are very sexual beings.
Right.
I'm just wondering how you guys handle that stuff.
There are boundaries. I think that each person needs to establish in their own mind, and that's one of the things in the decision-making process, is that we don't tell them what their boundaries need to be, but they need to be able to identify and have a plan and an objective of how they are going to handle their sexuality prior to going out on a date, and that they have their boundaries established, and then from that point they have a better opportunity to continue to say no. If they have no boundaries established in their lives, they're going to fall into sex. That's the consequence of it.
And we do talk a lot about dating and making decisions before you're like in the back seat of the car or wherever you are, making those decisions early on. Good communication skills in the relationship, etc.
So in other words, you're helping these young people, you're giving them the tools so that they can set their own boundaries, and you're empowering them.
Right. We can't make the decision for them, but that's the important thing, I think, about this kind of a program, is that you're allowing them to think through. Every student has the opportunity to think through their own sexuality and their issues. And that's the important thing. For us to go in and say, this is what you need to do, we might as well throw the bucket out. But to identify and give them the privilege of identifying their plan, that's real important.
Carol. I wanted to lend my support to the statement in your material here about the importance of perhaps taking this to junior high students in particular. 2 years ago, when we conducted our annual writing assessment of all eighth graders, which is done in many communities around the state, its purpose is academic placement for high school. And we gave them what we thought was a rather innocuous topic about friends that everybody could respond to for academic purposes. And the 12 of us who read those thousands of papers were so distressed by the things that those students, who were anonymous to us, shared about sexual pressure and drug and alcohol use pressure. We were so concerned that we went to the superintendent and requested that a letter be sent to all parents of junior high age students just saying, we know that in many respects this is your area of concern, and we know you want to know that there's a lot of misinformation out there. You have a lot of frightened sons and daughters out there who want to say no and are worried and are in situations that are beyond them. And so I think that as valuable as this is for high school students, and I'd certainly want to have it in my school if it were available in Fairbanks, I think that the critical time to get a hold of kids and establish boundaries before they've been violated is in those junior high years, and I would certainly lend my support to that. The other thing I think might be valuable too is junior high kids are so impressed with high school kids.
Yes.
Right? And so if some of those speakers that you used were still high school age going into junior highs and providing those positive role models of kids who say no, I think you have wonderful success. The one question I have, and I don't mean it to seem a criticism, because I really like the positive approach of this program. I think it's great. What kind of safety net have you developed for somebody who falls off the cliff, right? I mean, everybody makes mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And suppose I were one of your just say no panelists, but I didn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't mean to, but and I know that you're going to call me, and I'm going to go say my piece again, but I know that I've no longer kept up to my end of things, How do you deal with that? Do kids feel that there's a listening ear for that, and to deal with that? And then the other thing is, how do you deal with the people who are willing to come in and share experiences, who've been pregnant, who've had bad experiences, so that there isn't a negative judgment made of them, you know, so that they aren't treated as, well, here's the mistake, and here are the great kids who haven't made a mistake. And how do you deal with those issues?
I think your first question, we do talk about secondary virginity. Drug addicts make new choices to go clean, and alcoholics make new choices to be alcohol-free, and sex can be an addiction, and you can make new choices to be sex-free. So we talk about that, and we talk about that it is possible to make new choices. It's going to be a little more challenging to make those new choices, but it's possible, and talk about accountability, having a friend that's made the same choice as you, being accountable to someone, having someone that can check up on you now and then, and we give them some tools, some ideas to follow through on that.
And I think the second response of how do we handle that person who comes and who is sharing a story about their own lives, I think that when a young woman makes a choice to share her story, she's doing it, or a young man, they are doing it because they're committed to making change in young people's lives, whether it be someone who has had a baby at a young age and they know what it's like to go through that. Their purpose in life right at that particular time is to help make a difference in someone else's life. So as far as handling that, it's been very positive. And the students really appreciate it. I think whenever we can openly stand up before a student and share a part of our life that has been very vulnerable, we are making a very positive impression upon them, because there's nothing that we have done that they're not thinking about doing. And it's just important for us to be open and vulnerable to these young students, and they appreciate it. And so I don't think there's a lot of negative feedback to that particular person who would be sharing her story or his.
Okay, there are sandwiches in the back room, so why don't we break for just a couple of minutes while we figure out how Jeannie wants us to get those, so that we go there when they come here. And we'll do that, and then we'll start then. Beth, why don't you both just leave here quickly?
Okay.
Because I think they'll probably be some questions.
All right.
For those of you online and elsewhere, we are just breaking for a couple of minutes while we each get our sandwiches, and we're going to go right back.
Well,
I am planning to go out to New Orleans. Where are you? Thursday, I must be in. Judy, as soon as you're ready, we'll start again.
These were, am I on? three centers were modeled basically after the Christian Action Council out of Washington, D.C. But each center is sort of has their own entity and has their own programs that they establish. And such as the abstinence program that we established in the Anchorage community is not necessarily something that every other center would have to offer. We just saw such a need and felt like this was one positive way that we could reach into the community. So there are, I think right now there are six different centers in the state of Alaska. But I believe that the Valley and Anchorage and possibly the Homer Center are doing abstinence training in the schools.
Fairbanks is also doing that.
Oh, okay.
And what was the original model that was brought to Alaska with the program?
The original model was an advocacy program to support men and women who found themselves in an unplanned pregnancy and who were opting to carry their babies to term or to release their babies for adoption. And so we right now in Anchorage are a center that supports women through a number of different advocacy programs, such as maternity baby clothing. We have a program that we have family live-in environments where young women who are 18 and older can go into a home family environment and have some support during their pregnancy. We have a friend and friend program, what we call, where if there's a young single mom that is really needing some support that requires some one-on-one initiative, why we will send a volunteer upon her request to her just to be a friend to her. Maybe take her and walk her in the mall just to get her out of the house. Possibly she needs to get to her doctor's appointments, which we're very concerned about, and so we would offer her some transportation to do that. On occasion, we'll have a young woman who calls the center, and she has been working with us off and on throughout her pregnancy, or even now the baby is 2 years or 3 years old, and she finds that she is in a financial difficulty, and maybe her car's broke down, and we'll evaluate her situation, and we might be able to give her bus tokens for the next month so that she can get herself to her programs and her other meetings that she has, maybe her doctor's appointments for her children, etc. So we are an advocacy program that was established for that purpose.
And how do people find out about your program?
We have are advertised in the telephone book, and we also have public service announcements on occasion that we offer to the community. We have advertising in the yearbooks of the schools, and just a lot of it is just community knowledge. A friend tells another friend.
And here in Anchorage, when you take the program into the schools, is it happening at all of our high schools?
No, we have been in approximately, I think we've been in Bartlett, we've been in Diamond, East, Chugiak, and we've been in Gruning Junior High, Wendler Junior High. I'm sorry, I can't think of all of them right now, but we have not been in all the schools. What I found to be real positive with the program, when we have offered it to the individual teachers, and they, we have gone in and done a program, the response has been such that the teachers will invite us back the next year because there's been some positive feedback from the students after the program. I was thinking as I was sitting back there, you know, it's hard to define what the success is of a program. I think we all find that as a frustration. We talk about implementing programs and how do we define the success of it. And I think we just have to look at it from one-on-one. And I was reminded of last year one of our educators went in and did a program, I think it was at Bartlett High School. And it was a week-long series. She talked to almost 800 students. The first day in the classroom, there was a young man who sat back there very arrogant and somewhat belligerent. And she just, you know, handled it as well as she could and got through it. And he was really being rather obnoxious. And the last day, this was on a Monday, and the last day of the program was on a Friday. And she was walking out of the school, so she did not, he did not have to come and confront her. But he came from behind her and tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Mrs. Coring, I would just like to thank you for being here this week. And I apologize for my behavior the first day that you were in the class." He said, "You've made me think." And to me, that was a success, because we caused that young man to think. And he did this on his own desire. He wasn't confronted to apologize.
So when you go into a school, is it usually the teacher or principal that contacts your program and invites you in?
What we normally do is we initially established ourselves on the resource list through the Anchorage School District, and we were recommended at that time to be on the resource list that they have given out to all the teachers. And then from that point, the teachers will contact us, and we will plan at that time to go in for the training.
Okay, any other questions? I'd like to thank you both for your service. I really appreciate it. It's a really interesting program. I'm really curious.
We appreciate the opportunity.
Stephanie.
Oh. I just have a comment. I assume that you are loosely affiliated with the crisis pregnancy program in Juneau. Or you are at least maybe not associated, but you both have the same backbone, sort of.
I don't really know that much about the Juneau program, and so it would be hard for me to identify whether or not. I think I've spoken to the director there about 3 years ago regarding a client referral, so I'm not familiar with their program.
Well, from what you're saying, it's very similar to my knowledge of what the Juneau people are doing, although they don't have this aggressive outreach program. But I did want to say that their program is very well advertised. Of all of the crisis pregnancy support alternatives in Juneau, my sense is that their program is one of the best advertised. I see placards in the buses. I see a lot of information coming out, and so I just wanted to say that your group has done a really good job of getting your point of view and the services and philosophy that you offer out into the community, and I just wanted you to know that I noticed.
Thank you.
Yes,
Nancy.
I wanted to ask about whether this program is adaptable to much younger children than junior high. I know the community that I come from, the sexual activity starts at a very early age.
Yes.
And it's been something that's been accepted for many years in our community. You know, while I lived there as a very young child, I remember being sexually active at a very tender age when life should be full of innocence.
Yes.
And I just wondered if this program was real, if it was adaptable to elementary students, and if you've used this program with elementary students.
Decision-making and refusal skills to be the prominent issue more so than the human sexuality issue, if that makes any sense. That what we're really needing to do at an early age is to cause young people to think about what their actions involve and what the consequences of those can be. So I believe that could be a very positive program and would be a major. And the human sexuality could possibly be a minor that would be integrated in with it. Does that make any sense? That would just be my own thoughts on that.
Would that also, when you're talking about a young age, are you talking about what age in mind are you thinking of? I'm thinking about even as far as like preschool.
I was going to ask you what your thought was on that. You're talking about preschool?
Right.
I don't know if I have any more comments on that other than I think it would be how the program would be run as far as what would be the major and what would be the minor issues involved in the training.
Thank you. To follow up on Nancy's question, which I thought was had a lot of insight, I was just reminded of the fact that Alaska has an incredibly high incident of sexual abuse and incest, and I'm wondering if there is a component of your program that addresses that, or if that's come up in any of your groups, knowing that some people can choose to not violate their boundaries, yes. And they're not even responsible for it. Right. I'm just wondering if you guys have a way of dealing with that.
I've been recognizing of late that half of the clients that I've been seeing personally have been sexually abused. So this is something that we're looking into, and how can we effectively intervene in this area.
And I think the main thing when you come into that is coming from a loving and caring position, and allowing that individual to recognize that this is not a choice that she has made, and that she can choose self-esteem in the midst of this kind of a situation, and that she can go beyond that. That too is a choice and a decision that we can make.
Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I'm very gratified to see the amount of public testimony that we're going to be having today. It's significant, and I very much appreciate it, because we have people in Ketchikan, Klatskew, Kanatsu, Fair Banks, and here in Anchorage who want to testify, and also in Juneau. If there are any other sites that have people who are interested in testifying, please have your network operator let our operator know so that I will have that information. What I'd like to do, because we have so many people who want to speak, I will go around the communities, and I will try to each time let you know who's going to be next so you can be ready. I'd like everyone to try to keep their comments to about 3 minutes. And any written testimony that you have, we'd very much like to have, and we'll make available in our minutes to each of the task force members and to the public. And why don't we, let's start here in Anchorage, and the first person I have signed up in Anchorage is Wendy Thon, and then after Wendy, we will go to Fairbanks, to Georgianne, and so if you'd be ready, Georgianne.
Wendy?
And if you please identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Is this on?
If you push that toggle switch forward. There you go.
Okay. My name is Wendy Thone. I am the Maternal and Adolescent Program Nurse Consultant for the state. And I would just like to comment on a couple of things that occurred today. First of all, I would like to put in a plug for school-based clinics. I was concerned about the comments that were made in Fairbanks regarding the services that are provided in a school-based clinic. I think that, at least across the nation, in some of the conferences I've attended and people I have talked to, the services that are provided in a school-based clinic are basically primary health care services. There are some areas that do provide contraceptive services. This is not definitely nationwide. It's certainly locally controlled. However, the primary care services that are provided are very basic for adolescents. We are finding that probably about 40% of our adolescents in our state also do not have health insurance, and so therefore do not have access to even primary or basic health care services. And certainly there are many illnesses, preventive services that adolescents do need during the time that they are going to school. The other issue is just the access of services within the schools. First of all, just as an example, in Fairbanks, the Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Center is about 100 feet from the Fairbanks Health Center. And the Fairbanks Health Center is a place where the majority of the teens go and get their pregnancy tests. If they indicate that they are interested in looking at adoption as an option, the Fairbanks Health Center personnel refer the students over to the Fairbanks Counseling Adoption Center. Now, this is 100 feet catty-corner from where the health center is. The majority of students cannot make it there for some reason. We don't know if they just cannot cross the street or what happens to them. However, what you have, the ability that you have in the school, is you have the access to services that you may not be able to within a community, and as has been identified, the transportation is a number one barrier to a lot of services for teens. The second thing is you were discussing the population seen at the Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption, and as a grantor to them for their Pregnancy Support Services program, I would just like to point out that they do see only a proportion of the pregnant teens in Fairbanks. They certainly do not see all of them, so that is to be kept in mind, that they are not seeing all of the pregnant teens within the Fairbanks area. And then the second thing, at least in the Fairbanks area, and certainly in the Anchorage community too, we have a coordinated network of services that we, you know, of agencies that do get together, that do talk about services, and do coordinate so that we don't duplicate services. It may appear that we have services that are duplicative. However, we have agencies that do serve different populations. There are certainly services or agencies that are seeing the younger teens. There are certainly agencies that are seeing the older teens. And a lot of times these services don't cross, you know, depending on the population that they are seeing.
What was the percentage of young people you said had no health insurance?
About 40%.
And is that primarily because their parents...
It's both. Parents don't carry insurance. A lot of families of low income will often have insurance only on the provider, you know, the person working, and not on the family members, predominantly the mothers and children. And we're finding that with the prenatal care 2 program that we have in Anchorage, that certainly insurances don't have, parents aren't carrying insurance on their adolescents, and certainly not anything to cover pregnancy in their.
Is the state trying to put together statistics on the number of people who do or don't have insurance in the state? Is that something that we keep track of?
Well, we have some statistics. We have a few. Like with the prenatal care 2 program, we have, we do keep information on who has insurance and who does not have insurance. But certainly that's not all of the population eligible for services either. It was just before the pregnancy. So it's lacking.
I had some information which I got from Senator Kennedy's office in Washington, D.C., looking at a national health care initiative. And his information says that only 36% of the workforce has health care insurance. And of that 36% of the healthcare that workforce that has health insurance, only 18%. Just half, I guess, has insurance provided for their other family members. And that less than 5% of the workforce has complete health care coverage. And most of these other plans have significant deductibles. And if we're talking about a teenager that has to deal with his parents' deductibles, I think we've got a much greater percentage of uninsured young people.
Oh, definitely. We have, in the prenatal care 2 program, we run into families that have deductibles up to $1,000 or more. And that's a significant amount of money for those families because they are certainly under 185% of the federal poverty level of the state. So they are definitely impacted by any kind of health care problem, let alone a teen pregnancy.
It really ends up that they have no health care at all when you're speaking about a deductible of $1,000.
Right.
Thank you very much. We will move to Fairbanks now to Georgiana, and then I've been asked if we could go to Kotzebue next because the high school students who wish to participate have to leave at 1:10 p.m. and will certainly be happy to do that. So we'll come to Kotzebue for all the testimony there next after Fairbanks. Georgiana?
This is Connie, and Georgiana is going to speak in just a moment, but she was kind enough to allow me a little time to make something that I think needs clarification, and that is that when pregnant teens go into the health center, they are referred to us for options counseling, not just if they decided to adopt. That needed clarification. We do not just see the teens who wish to adopt. We see all teens who have seek options counseling. The other fact is that we see as many teenagers and pregnant teens as possible, and we're working real hard to get to reach all of them, and I don't know that any agency reaches all pregnant teens or that whether we have statistics on reaching all teens, but we certainly are available to all pregnant teens. So I just want to put that in for the note of clarification, and now I'll give it to Georgine.
Thank you, Georgine. I apologize for
mispronouncing
your name.
That's okay. My name is Georgine Seeliger, and I am the coordinator and instructor for Hutchison Teen Parenting Vocational Program. This is a new program that is available in Fairbanks. Howard Luke Alternative School did have a teen parenting program, primarily a child care center, available to their students last year. What we did is we involved Howard Luke and Hutchison in writing a grant, and we received Carl Perkins money In a total of about $64,816 to help match and supplement what the school district was willing to put into this program. The program at Hutchison, they provide a variety of services. Some of the ones that really impact the pregnant or parenting teens, we do provide child care services on site. We have a beautiful child care center for that and can have children from 6 weeks to 6 years of age. We also can provide transportation, and this did come from our grant, getting them and their child to and from school. We work with the different services within our own school district. Because most students, once they become pregnant, will drop out of school, our focus is to keep the thread of school within the framework of their lives. So by adding in exposing them to homebound and linking them up with a homebound teacher during this time of getting them back into school and continuing that on rather than dropping out and having the experience of maybe being out of school for 2 or 3 years or the rest of their lives. We also provide core courses and special topics that are applicable to our pregnant and parenting teens. Right now our course listings are child development, relationships, and special topics, which really addresses the specific issues of what the students' needs are. We network real heavily with community agencies and support services that are available in our own community. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that happens in Fairbanks, where we work to complement each other in our programs and not duplicate. Since, you know, as Connie said, the students that we have, none of us see all of them. And it is finding what are the best services for that particular student's needs. So we've worked real hard to learn about our own community and what things are available so that students can have those needs met and find the people that will work best with them. We have in the program right now approximately 20 students. Three students are in transit to our out of school because of real close to their due dates. One young woman is waiting to come into the program and will be arriving October 22nd when her child is 6 weeks of age. Out of those 20 students, they are signed up for 50 courses that I am teaching, 50 classes in the teen parenting program. And I think what that proves is that they are attending courses, one or two or three, that they sign up for to start back into their education. They are also taking other vocational classes, and that totals to about 25 other classes besides our teen parenting courses. We have on our file probably 12 students that we are actively involved in getting them back into school, and we're very active in working with the Alaska Work Program and jobs with the change in the Welfare Reform Act, and are pleased that students that are coming back to school, we have four of their students right now, four of those people that have chosen to come back to school, and some of these students have been out of school for up to 3 years and have children up to 3 years of age. So it's identifying and helping not only those that are pregnant now, but also those students that have never received a diploma or gone on for a GED. Our focus is to increase education. It can be for vocational training, literacy, GED, or a diploma, but it's moving them in the right direction, getting the feet pointed in the right way. It might be a slow move to start, having them make some assessments of what needs that they have, and we just help provide the ways and the services for those to happen.
Thank you. Any questions? Yeah.
Carol.
Hi, Jodie.
Hi.
This morning, we had some very interesting information from the state of Oregon regarding relationships, classes, and prevention of pregnancy through what they call a revitalization of home economics program in that state. Do you have any comment about the current status in terms of district-level support for these kinds of programs as far as relationships, classes, and the kinds of places to put in preventive work in the high schools?
I have some very strong comments on that. Our district in the past has been supportive of vocational education. In the last 5 years, it has changed dramatically, excuse me, and especially in the last 2 years. In vocational education, and especially in the area of home economics, life skills training. And our field has tried to really look at how does home economics make a positive impact on our community, what are the needs of that community. And those were the areas in which we felt the focus was really necessary and have worked hard to upgrade our skills in those areas. As an example, West Valley High School had two full-time home economics teachers, and their primary area of coursework was in those areas, of course, as they taught to high school students. This year, there is one home economics teacher, and there are only two of her five courses are in that area. As a preventative nature, there is nothing better. I'm very happy to see that there is a mandated ninth grade health curriculum, but I also believe that none of us ever learn anything once, or only if we hear it one time. Our courses that we offer in home economics, such as relationships, happen to be a junior-senior class, family living being a sophomore, junior-senior class, and those are wonderful complements as students are developing and maturing and their own relationships are changing. And I think the loss of those programs and the loss of home economics is a disaster, not only for Fairbanks, but also for the state. The difference in the way and the approach of home economics as to other programs, home economics, the whole foundation is based on the family unit. And we define the family unit as whatever structure of family that particular person has. We are way beyond of recognizing that 7%, you know, of our population have a mom and a dad and two babies that are perfect and that have no problems. All of us will seek out a family structure. All of us have relationships. And I think home economics bases their whole system on that. And that's why I think it's an integral part of any training or of any education. The loss of that, we have some supplemental coursework, but it isn't a replacement, and I think we're doing a disservice. It's a perfect place for preventative education.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Kosovo, and I have four names of people who got to testify. I have Maude Blair, Helen Stein, Mike Seiler, receiver, and Chris Larson, and I will let you four decide what order you'd like to go in. We'll go ahead and take all of you.
Hello, my name is Wynn Huss, and I'm going to be taking over for Chris Larson here for a few minutes because I've got some students that need to get back to the school. Let me introduce myself for just a second before I turn it over to the students. I am a half-time home economics teacher at Cassidy High School. I'm involved with students as a Future Homemakers of America sponsor and as a class advisor. I also happen to be the only home economist in the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, which is roughly the size of the state of Georgia. With me today are 10 students. Three are ninth graders, two are 11th graders, and five are seniors. Of this group and within our class, we have two full-time mothers and one student who is expecting. I also have four students who would like to talk with you today, and the first person is going to be Maude Blair. I'll turn her over right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Wynn.
My name is Maude Blair, and I'm a junior at Cassidy High School, and I am an FHA state officer. FHA offers quite a few programs for teens, and some of those programs have to do with teen pregnancy. I feel that programs for teens help them become aware of what their choices are, both before and after pregnancy. Teens need to be aware of what happens when you become pregnant. They have to know about what they will have to give up. Teen mothers first have to give up things like social life, their night life, and most importantly, they have to give up their school life. Thank you.
Thank you, Maude.
My name is Gabe Huss. I'm in the ninth grade at Cassidy High School. Some of the activities, I'm in a varsity basketball, student government, and teacher homemakers of America. Right now, I really enjoy my life, becoming sexually active. Teacher. Sex education classes are constant reminders that I'm responsible for my own actions and that I can determine my future. Boys need to know that they are responsible for their actions and to be reminded of it. Thank you.
Helen Stein. I'm an 18-year-old mother. I'm a 2-year-old girl. I think that there is enough sex education. And I believe that men or young men do not take part in the responsibility of their sexual activities or... And the behaviors, and I think that the crime that goes on out there is not reported, or the sexual abuses, or the other problems against young women, or just they take advantage of younger teenage girls. And I believe that there should be individual counseling, whether it be one counselor, 10 counselors, that talk on a daily basis with a student with their problem. I believe that they need someone to talk to. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. And Stephanie has a question for you, Helen. I wasn't sure I heard you right. Did you say you thought that there was enough education, sex education in school?
I think there is enough because I've learned a lot through my high school. And I've schooled down in the Anchorage area, and I've learned a lot from down there.
Do you think that your fellow classmates learned the same lessons you did?
In most of the ways, because they participate and we're real close, we all know each other, and I think that they got the picture of what we were learning.
Thank you. Thank you,
Anna. Hello, my name is Michael Zeiler. I'm an FHA state officer, and FHA is a family-friendly organization that offers opportunities to learn about family life and growing up, teaches leadership skills, and helps to prepare you for life. One of the interests FHA has is reducing the rate of teen pregnancy, and we are doing this through workshops and other individually based programs. The biggest factor, though, is that we as teens have to ask ourselves if we really want the responsibilities that go with being sexually active. Are we ready for a sick kid, expenses for a child, and everything that goes along with parenthood? Do we want to give up our freedom and education for a few hours of fun? We only have to realize that what we are giving up before we make that choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
My name is Chris Larson, and I'm the Health Education Program Manager for the Manitoba Association in the Northwest Arctic Borough. I have four comments I'd like to make on the discussion this morning. So far, all I've heard from is people from urban areas and no one from rural areas, so I may be the sole representative, I don't know. But a lot of the ideas and projects that were discussed this morning may very well work in your urban areas, but they're not practical for rural areas, and I definitely feel that needs to be considered since the majority of your Alaskans are in rural areas. As far as your education goes, I think we need to do a lot more work in the grade schools and the middle schools. Ninth grade is not early enough to start on decision-making, self-esteem, refusal skills, or even sex education, because we have more and more sixth, seventh, and eighth graders getting pregnant. I have a comment from one of our school board members, and it's a valid point, and I think it also needs to be considered in anything the state may decide to mandate or recommend or whatever, and that is that traditionally teen pregnancy has not been a problem. The problem is that now the teens are not taught the skills to cope with a pregnancy. His statement was, is our grandmothers, even some of our mothers, were married at 16 and had children at the same age, but they were taught the skills that they needed to be good parents. Those skills are not being taught now, and because of the diversity in cultures we have in Alaska, we need to consider some of those cultural aspects as well as what we as educators or legislators feel that is needed. We definitely need the input from the rural areas. comment on people were talking about school-based clinics and ways of receiving birth control information as well as methods. We don't even have a school nurse in our school district here, and I'm sure that there are other rural areas that are in the same boat. So a school-based clinic really isn't very practical. In the villages, we just have our CHPs in the clinics. They are doing an exceptionally good job. We also have village health educators up here that are working in the same area, and they also are doing an exceptionally good job. But it's very difficult for the students in the villages to go and ask for information or to go and ask for different methods of birth control, mainly because they know, I mean, they're probably related to the CHP or the CHP delivered them or whatever. And we need to come up with ways that we can get this information out or have accessibility to birth control measures that is not going to embarrass them. I think we're missing a lot of students because they're embarrassed to go talk to the people in their villages. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Chris, could I have your work phone number, please?
Yes, it's 442-3311, extension 196.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Chris? Okay, anyone else besides you wants to testify with us?
Senator Pence over here and Caspi wish to testify at this time. Thank you for letting us go a little early. The students really enjoyed it.
You're quite welcome, and we certainly appreciate having them be a part of what we're doing here today. And I would also like to encourage any of the students there, and certainly Chris and everyone else, to continue to be a part of what we're doing. We are going to invite the public to join in the subcommittee process, and we will make sure that our subcommittee meetings are also open to the world, so to speak, through the teleconference network. And any of you who are interested in actually joining and being a public member of these subcommittees, we would like to hear you do so. Okay, here in Anchorage, Ruth Lister, and when we leave Anchorage, we'll go next to the Mat Su. We have Emil Kutschauer, I believe, and Emil will be next.
Thanks. I'm Ruth Lister with the Alaska Women's Commission, and I wanted to just do a sort of a brief preliminary report on a study that we're doing that we hope to have published in the next month. We interviewed about 65 young women in, where were they, Nome, Bethel, Ketchikan, Kenai, Kotzebue, Barrow, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Unalakleet, Saldana, and I think also Galena. And so our study is that they were all either teenagers who had children or were pregnant, and our study was based on what they said. There was a series of about 11 questions that we posed, and they were interviewed usually in groups between 3 and 7. And then we transcribed tapes of what they said and then based our study on that. Virtually all of them said that they would, you know, although they loved their children, would choose not to be a teen parent and would encourage others to postpone both sexual activity and parenting until they were older. And so what we were looking at is what, you know, why were they then not making a decision that was in their best interest? Why did they not think well in that, you know, all children that are born, regardless of gender or economic status or race, have the same ability to think well for themselves, so something is interfering with that and something is standing in their way. And you know, although many of the things that came up were around family issues, there were also the societal influences which inhibited the ability of these young people, particularly young women, to think well about themselves and their sexuality and their future. And basically we saw that for all of them, many of their basic needs were unmet, and that there was an impact of institutional discrimination or oppression on them. When we look at basic needs, we're talking about safety, and for about half or more, actually about two-thirds, sexual and physical abuse was an issue. Their self-esteem, their societal needs and physical needs, and their need for self-actualization. There's a quote from the Children's Defense Fund president, Marion Endelman, who said that the best contraceptive is a real future. And I think this really is something that came out of our study, that for most of these young women, a sense of hopelessness about their future and a lack of perceived life options was what we were hearing. And so our study really took a turn to look at the need for a wider sociological perspective and, you know, why among Alaskans, in particular Alaskan Native poor and rural young women, were having a higher rate of pregnancy and childbirth. And in looking at the areas of discrimination, gender, age, race, and class, a lot of those came up. Under gender, that the young women particularly were vulnerable to sexual abuse, that they had a lack of life options and role models as young women growing up, that the media definitely devalued them. And we also did some interviewing with young men, and again, what comes up there was that it was okay for them to pressure girls to have sex and not okay for them to express feelings, and that for young men there was much less a feeling of responsibility or understanding of their responsibility. For under age discrimination, the young women felt systematically invalidated, that they were denied any real voice, and that as children or as teenagers, that they were victims of abuse that they could do very little about. Race and class came up time and again, and this was similar to the study on why young women drop out of school that we did earlier this year. There's for many of them, a lack of multicultural materials and curriculum in the schools give them the message that there aren't any role models and life options for them, particularly as non-whites. They get negative messages, and the limits that they see placed on members of their group, either from due to economic status or race, contributed to their sense of hopelessness about their future. I'm hoping that we'll see, we'll be able to have this study too by your next meeting. I'm listening to some of the other testimony that I've had, it definitely ties in that prevention has to go beyond information on contraception prevention. I think somebody made the comment this morning that a good prevention program is from the waist up, that we're really looking at trying to help young women and young men with decision making and to give them a real future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. Okay, we'll go now to the Matsu for Emil Kurtscheller, and after that we will come back to Anchorage for, I'm not sure whether it's Michelle or Michelle. Bash. With an N, Michelle, I like that. Okay. If you'll be ready, let's go to the Matsu, please.
Yes, this is Emil Kurtscheller. Can you hear me there?
Yes, sir.
Good. I'd like to make a few comments today dealing with the general subject of teenage pregnancies, and also something that comes, a situation that develops somewhat prior to teenage pregnancy period. First of all, who am I talking with there? I'm not familiar with who's present at your location this morning.
Well, we have members of the task force itself, and I don't know whether at the LIO there's a full list of all the task force members. I'm Senator Pierce, I'm co-chair with Representative John Ellis, who has been with us this morning, had to leave to go give a speech, will be rejoining us. So we have the actual task force members here.
I see. Good. Well, what I wanted to try to point out to your task force members this morning is that I think it's excellent the approach that you're taking to addressing these problems of teenage pregnancies and what I would call spin-off effects of teenage pregnancy. But one of the things that I and a number of family support groups in the region would like to see focused on is a period in the lives of the teenagers that actually comes considerably before their teen years. We feel that there needs to be consideration given to what is the background development that occurs for each child as a child grows. In other words, is there any assurance along the way in a child's rearing period of establishing positive values and morals? for the young children, because certainly if these are not established early on in a child's life, it therefore offers a strong pressure in the direction of, let's just say, well, we're talking today about the problems of teenage pregnancies and so on. We tend to set the groundwork for teenage pregnancies and other potential problem scenarios to occur. If we haven't established positive values and morals in our children at the earliest of ages, if we have children growing up without a stable family life, particularly without strong, solid lines of communication, these children become the seed base for teenage groups of children or young adults who have in general lost their way in life and perhaps experienced sexual relationship, pregnancy, abortion, violence, and so on. What I'd like to try to recommend is that somewhere in your processes that you interface with other organizations or similar groups, for instance, such as the Family Law Review Task Force being chaired by Senator Coghill, family support groups, the Department of Education, the court system in Alaska, and also individual families, for that matter, that would like to have input. I'd like to suggest that your working in concert with these other sources provides us with an avenue of perhaps avoiding some of the problem that we're here trying to address today. In other words, approaching that seed base, our young children, when they are very young, and trying to establish not only the morals and values that they have to have, but setting thereby some direction for them, hoping to avoid problems later in life. I have just a brief example that I'd like to try to point out to you relating to a young child that has some strong indication in her life that she's heading down the road towards perhaps teenage pregnancy or violent abuse and so on. This young girl is actually only 6 years old. Her counseling psychologist indicates that due to the family disruption that she's experiencing stemming from divorce, physical violence, various forms of mental emotional abuse, that the young girl is one of the most likely candidates he has ever seen for child sexual abuse, molestation, teenage pregnancy when she's a little older. And actually, the psychologist began to see strong signs of suicide potential. And yet, I remind you, this little girl is only 6 years old. However, there appears that through the court system, various social service organizations, there appears to be no sense of reality in dealing with this particular young girl and helping her to avoid the development problems rooted early in her life. No attempt to steer her clear of the potentials for such things as problem pregnancies in her teen years. The effect of not addressing many of the problems that you're looking at today, beginning in an age group much younger than the teen years, I think only makes our task more difficult. I have heard a number of other participants in the conference this morning indicate also that they feel that it may be too late to try to address these problems for some people. If we wait into the teen years or until the high school period, I would tend to agree with this very strongly, that we need to look at the earlier roots of these problems and try to address them at that earlier period in the children's lives. Just a few moments ago, one of your participants mentioned that the best contraceptive is a real future. I couldn't agree more strongly with that. But also, perhaps the best way to help each of our children and teens become a positive contribution to our society is to assure the stability and support of family during the early years. That's basically all the comments that I have today, unless I can answer some questions for anyone.
Ian, well, thank you. Your points are well taken. Just two groups that I can tell you specifically that we are interfacing with. Obviously, this afternoon, you've seen the agenda. We're headed off to see the state school board and talk to them about having them be a part of our subcommittee process and be a part of the recommendation process back to the legislature. We also are closely connected with the Joint Committee on School Performance, and while that ties more specifically into actual classrooms in the state of Alaska, I think we all feel that the schools are going to be one of the places
esteem beginning at a very, very early age, and it's one of the reasons that the Head Start programs throughout the country, and certainly in our state, have been so successful. And if we could begin with those sorts of programs and have it available to all the children in the state, I think would be a major step forward for the programs. Does anyone have a question for you? Okay, we will get to you, if you don't have one, a list of all the task force members. I have your post office box, and we'll get one of those in the mail to you today.
I have one question, Senator, Representative, if you have one.
Sure.
Is there an opportunity for your task force to interface with Senator Coghill's task force on family law on any of these issues?
I don't know. I have to talk to Senator Coghill and see what his schedule is, because I don't have any idea what your schedule is.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much, and here in Anchorage to Michelle. And after Michelle, we will go to Juno. Michelle?
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Begich, and I represent the Salvation Army Booth Home, Maternity Outpatient Program, and also their Infant Nursery, brand new program. Today I'd like to talk to you about both programs, as both programs will end services as of December.